So let's debate, first of all, some of the issues facing mankind today, and, you know, get on to the subject of can we change before it's too late? And I think, Julia, if you can kick off with some of the key issues that the world's facing, not just the world, but also on our doorsteps, some of the key issues that we'll be facing with climate change when you look at your models for the future.
Thanks so much. First of all, what I'd like to say, of course, is that I think you'll probably hear because indeed the evidence is stacking up, and I think barely a day goes by now, and we don't see new evidence emerging from very detailed studies from all parts of the world showing that we're warming up, we're changing weather patterns, ecosystems are changing because we're changing weather patterns. Ice is disappearing, sea levels are rising, all these observations which perhaps 5 years ago we could have said, well, is that just because the climate varies naturally, is it really a fingerprint of climate change? I think in the last 5 years we've seen the evidence really stack up. And what the evidence also is doing, of course, is saying that in a broad sense, our kind of model predictions are correct. And it was very easy a few years ago to just say, well, those are just a load of models and they don't mean anything. But more and more we see that the observational evidence fits with what our models are telling us. And so we should take those projections very seriously indeed. And for us in the UK, it's not all bad news, of course. And someone will say, well, maybe we can't good news because I'll be able to grow grapes, grow olives, whatever. But there will be some pretty serious impacts on us as a nation because of things like rising sea level, more extreme weather, things like winter to be wetter, and therefore there to be more flooding. We expect heat waves, sort of thing we experienced this July. Not quite as bad as 2003, but we expect those to become a lot more frequent. So those are the sorts of things that we're going to see here, and of course other parts of the world far more seriously affected than we are. I don't think our livelihoods will be threatened that much, but for some people it will be a matter of life and death, and that's a very, very serious situation.
Mark, is that trouble that we can grow grapes in the future, and therefore we have mixed messages, because the question is very badly. She was watching television last night, and there's a leading scientist who warned that, you know, we have precisely one decade to save our planet, and yet, on the other hand, we're being told it'll be a more tropical climate and we can grow grapes, and therefore these mixed messages are really not getting a consistent theme about the dangers of climate change.
Yes, and I think actually having, although I agree with everything Julia said, I think she's in danger of understating the case slightly, as scientists are wont to do. They want to be clear about the uncertainty that's associated with all their work, and they don't want to ever sound too alarmist, and they don't really want to go out too much of the limb. But not all scientists are of the same models. Dr. Jim Hansen, who's probably the top climate scientist in the United States, made a warning last week that we have literally 10 years left to bring down emissions. He's not saying that within 10 years the entire world will fry. What he's saying is we have 10 years left as a window of opportunity to stop these kinds of more severe impacts happening further down the line. And so my concern actually is that much of the scientific work, and my upcoming book is based entirely on the scientific work and published journals, is actually slightly conservative. I mean, if you look at this latest report from the Arctic sea ice, which is featured in all the mainstream press today, this showed a 14% reduction in the perennial sea ice, so that's the sea ice which is meant to be there permanently, in the space of just 2 seasons. Now, if you follow that logic through, it'll be gone in 10, 15, 20 years. And yet the models that I've been working on, and the NASA model, the key scientists have been working on, told us we've got till 2070, 2080. And so actually, the signals we're getting from the real world tell us that the impact is accelerating much more rapidly than politicians and much more rapidly than scientists have dreamt. And that's what makes me particularly concerned about the rate of change is happening and the inadequacy of our response so far.
Thank you, Mark. Anne Snowbird, you're an MP representing constituents in Swindon, as is Michael Wills. Do you get much feedback from your constituents saying, you know, we really fear climate change and therefore whatever government is in at the time, they should be taking this as a serious step to tackle these things.
I think it's beginning to change. I know that everybody in this hall has come here because you have a special interest in climate change. I think you'll accept that not necessarily all your neighbours across Swindon do people have the same level of understanding and access as you do. But I think it is beginning to change because people mention the environment on the doorstep a lot more than they used to do, even last year or the year before. So people's perceptions and understanding of the what will happen if we don't take action has risen. And I think it's quite interesting. It becomes obvious that people are interested and want to do more, but they don't know how to, and they want the government to do more, but they're not necessarily have the language and the understanding and the depth of understanding. And to be honest, I'm not sure I do all the time as well. I'm not an expert in the environment or climate change, but what I read in the Independent and other newspapers is a great concern to me as well. Most ordinary people express their concerns about the environment in terms of recycling, and they want to do their bit, and that's how they see themselves as doing their bit. And it is amazing how many people on the doorstep, including today, being outside, so talking to people, do mention recycling and want to do more. So I think the perception is rising, whether it's rising fast enough.
Robert, you want to look at areas of concern so that you can leave a place for future generations. Recycling is a key area of development. So what is the local authority expressing when it looks at climate change? How does it sort of express its concerns? And what sort of strategic areas does it try to improve on?
Well, as we've all heard, we have a big issue. And I think the time has come for action. And I don't think the time for talking is over, but the time for action is now. What is clear to me and to my colleagues is that we have responsibilities at all levels. There's clearly things that the government has got to do because they have to set the framework. There's clearly things that the local authority have to do through the planning process, through recycling, through waste, and all the issues that the local authority have to do. But also, there's things that we have to do as individuals, as citizens. But what we do need to do is to bring all of that together in some sort of coordinated understanding of what's required. The issues we've got clearly carbon emissions, which is clearly causing most of the problem. Yes, recycling, obviously the way we live and manufacturing and production, all of this produces carbon. We are living an unsustainable lifestyle, that is becoming very evident. That doesn't mean to say that we have to sort of pack up and go home and think the world is over. But clearly, if we are going, we've got 10 years or however long we've got to take the action now to do it. As a council, we're very clear that we've got to come up with our policies as best that we can get them. We need, obviously, help from governments, we believe, to strengthen the planning process and all of those sorts of things. And also, we've been working with microworlds on waste and what have you, to start making an impact. If we don't do that, if we don't do it quickly, we're not actually going to achieve very much. We're setting ourselves the next, or we're setting it in a year now, trying to bring all of our policies together.
Michael, is the government listening to scientists that say you have a decade to start making change? And are you listening to your constituents who want to be proactive in making changes for better climate?
No, of course we're listening, but I have to say I agree with both what Mark Lyons said and what Rob Bruce just said. I mean, I agree with Mark Lyons when he said that the political response at all levels has been adequate. I mean, I think that is now absolutely clear. It's been too slow, too little. I also absolutely agree with Rob Bruce that the responsibility politically is certainly national government in the way that Rob said has a clear responsibility and is trying to discharge it. But in ways that I'll say at the moment, I think he can do a lot more. Local authorities have responsibility, but all have responsibility as citizens. I think one thing that hasn't been said, I'm certainly listening to constituents, but like Anne, I feel that there's a very, very dedicated vocal minority who absolutely sees this and driving the agenda among constituents, but they're not a majority yet. Now, I think there is a fundamental problem that we do need to be quite clear about. Whereas in the long term, I don't think tackling climate change effectively is going to be a break on the kind of lifestyles that we live. But in the short term, there are costs. There are very immediate costs. If, for example, just to take an example in Swindon, we want to generate biomass, we want to start having CHP plants, you actually have to have health and government to get that going. You have to have engagement from developers, councils as well. But that is the kind of energy that you want. You have to have planning conditions, which actually, in the short term, zero emission houses are more expensive, not much, but they pay for themselves in the long term, I suspect. But in the short term, they add something to the ticket price of a house. Now that's something we've all got to engage with. In the short term, that is going to cost more money. And it is, in the end, a question of priorities. Now, I have become convinced over the last 5 or 6 years, this must be a priority. But it's a difficult priority for politicians and for many people out there. Because actually, the obligation that we're charging is not about ourselves, not about this generation, but to our children and our children's children, and the full impact of this. It's going to be something that our primary. And so we have to educate people, and that is the responsibility of the politician, primarily the national politicians, to kind of create that climate of culture change to tackle climate change.
I mean, on that point, Fred Moss suggests that, ask the question, you know, will the general public change their behaviour? You know, are they willing to make, you mentioned some of those issues, but actually sacrifices, if you wish. Are they willing to do that, or will they do that only when it's facing them and it's too late?
Well, I believe we can, and there's lots of instances of successful cultural change among populations as a whole. And I also believe, and I would believe this being a member of the Labour Party, that people generally do feel, almost everybody feels some sort of moral obligation to their neighbours, how they define neighbours. And when we hear, Julia was telling me just earlier before we started about the problems of Bangladesh, and the terrible problems that climate change will place. Actually, some of the poorest and most vulnerable people in the world, you know, you can't separate out these issues. I think that people, actually, when they really understand this, will be prepared to make these sacrifices. People are very generous, actually, and, you know, you see lots of evidence on the ability of the British public in relation to great moral causes like debt relief and, you know, development aid, all these sorts of things, and to poverty in this country. So I am relatively optimistic, but, you know, I agree with what my partners are saying. Political response at all levels has been inadequate up to now, and that has got to change, not next year, you know, but now, and it's got to come from the centre. I believe we are doing it, but we've got to make sure that we do.
I don't want to dwell too much on recycling, but I'm looking at recycling figures for the Americans, and that suggests to me that some people will recycle, others just won't bother, and therefore it is a change in opinion for the public. They are very slow to take the message.
Well, they are, and as Rod says, we've been, Rod and I have been in the council, we've been working together and with Anne to try and improve the situation. Our council got a new plan coming in, they've got to be certain government targets. And I think as that happens, it will start creating an environment where people just automatically do. That's what we've got to do. There's always a leading edge, there's always a leading carver of people who, you know, are visionary and lead the way, and I suspect, you know, many people here believed in this course for a long time. That will, I believe it can spread out. The emperor is that quickly, and we can't wait.
Well, is it persuasion for people to take part in green issues, recycling, to make sure that they are developing a better climate for the future, or is it a big stick to make them do it?
I hope it's probably the former rather than the latter, but yes, it is a process of education. People need to understand that it is a requirement, that this is something we've got to achieve. I mean, good news is that recycling figures are on the way up. I mean, we started at about 16%, we're currently somewhere around 27-28%, and we've got to get to 50% on the targets currently set by 2010. So, we're, you know, there's a lot achieved, but an awful lot more to do. And I suspect that last bit will be a more difficult bit. Recycling is something which is, we believe, it's essential. We've got to have as a new waste strategy being developed at the moment, which will come out next year. But part of what we've been working with Michael on is to try and encourage people, supermarkets and whatever, to reduce the packaging that we produce in the first place. Because we're just recycling what we didn't need to produce in the first place isn't very helpful. So it's getting a balanced approach. What we have got to do is we've got to stop too much going into landfill and too much that can't be recycled. That's a given. But just recycling isn't great in itself, because that still needs energy to recycle materials and what have you. So it's about not producing waste.
Can I just add to that, actually? Having a conversation about recycling in the debate about climate change is fairly pointless, because recycling is about the it's important to make this very clear that all environmental issues are not reducible to recycling. And climate change is is much more than just an environmental issue. Climate change is about the survival of humanity. It's about the survival of the planet's habitable space, first of all. And how much you put in that world, what it is, and so on and so forth, is a very good point. So we really need to focus the debate, I think, on our energy use and on our personal emissions. And my own viewpoint on whether or not we have to force people to do this is that you probably do, actually. Certainly when we're talking about the slow time, the very short time window that we've got available, there's no way that we're going to get public opinion around to people doing things entirely voluntarily within the space of 10 years. I think we need to look at personal carbon allowances, carbon rationing, and quality of your life, which is going to have to be enforced by government to the first degree. But then when we've all got our rations, we can dispose of them how we like. So actually, that does leave the decisions up to the individual, which is the opposite way of sort of planning the economy, which is the worrying way. You could have a government saying, well, you can't fly, you must switch off your TV, you can't have this, you can't, and keep changing every single aspect of your life. If we all have personal carbon allowances, then it becomes up to us, and I think that's the political way that we need to be looking for.
That point means that those who are doing their bit for the environment, it's a typical aspect indeed, but you're deterring people then, you're spreading the message that actually what you're doing on recycling or any other measure is pointless. And at a time when surely people should be encouraged, maybe to cut usage of the car, you're suggesting that people don't bother because it's the tip of the iceberg, and it's down to sort of the global industry and the major governments and world leaders to actually make a change rather than people.
I'm suggesting the opposite of that. I'm saying that our collective action is what counts ultimately. It's true that if I, as I have done, give up my car and my neighbour gets a bigger one, that does entirely negate my sacrifice for quality of life. My ignorance of cost of step actually is rude for life having a car, but anyone believe that at the moment. But that's why change has to be collective, which is why you need political frameworks to make it happen. There's no just urging people or guilt-tripping people to do things at an individual level if they can see that the neighbours aren't doing it. Which is why we need government to force mechanisms and what that sort of action has as a basis.
So that's how we're going to say, I just thought about government therefore has to force this rather than rely on participation of people to achieve it.
Well, you can say that. I just feel that there are lots of people who do not begin to understand where you're coming from, Mark, and they're people I meet on a day-to-day basis. The difficulty is, if people are at a recycling station, you tell them that the efforts that they're making are not worth the candle. We'll not give up on everything, and they will resist any kind of obligation that you want to put on them. And I think we have to take people with them. It is a failure, both of politicians and of society. And I have to say, I think the environment is a challenge as well, that more people are not further forward on this. I think we all have a responsibility to get people further forward. I think there are things of hope, and I do think that people will move quicker. I would never believe that we'd have banned smoking so much prior to 5 years ago, and we are almost the same, but we've got a smoking ban coming next year. So I'm a bit more optimistic about what people will do and what they're going to do. But you do have to take them with you, and as a politician, kind of calling on people, I have to say, Mark, you're there, and most people are over there, and we've got to get people further towards, your way of thinking. I do agree with everything you said, but I think we can get, I do agree with the urgency in which you said it, and I think there might be, the negotiations and discussions about what we do.
Well, now we're just leaving it, that's what I'm saying.
To you how the folks out there feel, because they aren't like people in this hall. But I have to tell you, it's very sad, but we have to take it with you. I'm prepared to do that. You can throw those challenges at me and I will do that, and I'll look at your book even with interest and see what we can do. But we have to, I'm a practical politician, and we are not going to get this understood and agreed to by the people if we just say, what you're doing at the moment is rubbish. We have to force you to go down this route. We have to take people with you.
Okay, let's, Michael, you want to respond, and then, Julie, I'd like to give you a
just very quick question to support an answer. Look, it has to be a mixture of compulsion and persuasion. You cannot do it with one or the other. And it's quite simple. The government is prepared to compel people. It's compelling people. They need to tax it. Climate change, levy, tighter building regulations and so on. It's a compulsion. Now, what you're saying is, I understand, Mark, it's going to be much more compelling, much more tougher and much quicker. But there is a point where you just cannot take people with you. Now, we live in a democracy. I don't think it's true now. I don't think it's sad. I think it's actually healthy that we live in a democracy. And people will just chuck out politicians and get that balance of compulsion and persuasion wrong. We're out. And if we get this wrong, the consequences, as you said, are the whole future of humanity. And no one should be able to say about this. You know, this is not consensual yet. Whatever you depend on, puts on. There are incredibly powerful vested interests out there. A huge oil industry, not to mention mining industries throughout the world, that actually have billions of pounds at stake in this. Billions of pounds. We're going to move to a post-carbon world. Most of the biggest companies for the last 100 years go out of business. And they don't want to do that quickly. They don't want to do that in a 10-year time frame. They may be about 100 years time frame. And they are extremely powerful. They're huge amounts of money. And if you don't take people with you, so you have the power of democracy with you, those vested interests will start fighting back.
You know, my dog, that's me. I really think the government's hiding behind the, what they perceive as the public ignorance on this. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, about 1.5 million people marching on the streets of London about an issue which they felt very strongly about. And Tony Blair felt he needed to lead on this, and he went ahead and totally ignored them. On the Iraq war issue. I can't see 1.5 million people marching in London saying don't impose measures to solve the climate change problem. I just don't think that's likely to happen. So the space is there for the politicians to lead. They just need to have the courage to make a prediction. I'm concerned about that.
A question for Julia. You're listening to this. You have a message to spread. Who are you spreading your message to?
Right, very good question. I'd like to actually just pick up on the point Mark made about us being too cautious, because as a scientist, I take my responsibilities very seriously too, because the sorts of messages that we give out are very scary. And we have to be absolutely sure we haven't understated the case or overstated the case. Huge impacts from the science that we produce will flow. And a good example of that, and several of us have been working very closely with a survey in the last 2 months for a report that was published in the autumn on the economics of climate change. And we have had to deal with some pretty big issues about uncertainty, how rapidly global warming impact not just us, but India, China, all around the world. And we've had to face the fact that we have a huge responsibility to support and make recommendations. And they're not recommendations just for you in Swindon. They are, as Michael said, recommendations about the future of businesses, companies, livelihoods. You know, it's all very well to say, for example, don't buy food that's sourced in East Africa. Right? That's a very good idea because it's got huge miles attached to it and the carbon attached to it. But what about the little farmer in East Africa who that's his way to feed his family? So you know you have to think things through. I think as a climate scientist I take all these things very seriously, and we don't like to be accused of being cautious, because I don't think we are being cautious, but we're being responsible. And I'd like to pick up the point about sea ice, that's a good point. We know that our climate models are not yet as sophisticated as we might have. They're very sophisticated. To be able to model the sea ice problem, we need computers and so forth, much we currently have. But we are very aware, as scientists, of what we call tipping points in the climate system, the danger for really, really catastrophic changes. And I think the one that concerns me really at the moment, for example, is the turnout and the turnout process that we've seen this week. We take these very seriously, and we're not going to make sort of extreme statements about them, but we are alerting people to the dangers. So, yeah, we're cautious, but we're being responsible. You know, the sorts of policies that will have to be put in place on the basis of the science that people are needed to. We return to the future of the whole world, so we have to